Take a trip with us to learn about some of your neighbors with this edition of KXCR Conversations. These are neighbors just like you and me, and how their lives are filled with history. KXCR Conversations with you.
Hello and welcome to another exciting KXCR Conversations. My name is Larry Bloomfield. I'm your host. And today in the studio, I have Carol Slinger. And she is a writer, author, and just actress. You have done all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
I had an email come across my desk that had your name on it, and I started reading on it. And that is why I decided to have you come in here, because you not only have had a bunch of things you've done in your life, but you've had a very interesting life. And some of the stuff that got you started in the beginning of your life is a story in itself, and you actually wrote a book about that. And
right.
I found that really interesting. The book is named Hippie Woman Wild, A Memory of Life and Love on the Oregon Community by Carol Slinger.
A memoir of life and love on an Oregon commune.
Yes.
That's it.
Okay. Sorry.
Hippie Woman Wild.
I found it amazing to read just a profile on it and getting a little bit of information on how you got started in your life and the type of life you led and all. Can you kind of jump in here and give us a little bit of a story at the beginning before all of that? Who were you in the beginning? How did you get started in life?
Literally, how I got started in life?
Well,
or just
Where did you come from?
I'm from New York. Mm-hmm. I'm a native New Yorker. I'm one of the very few, I guess. I grew up in Manhattan, which is at the time and probably still is a strange place to grow up in.
And just so you know, my mom came from Staten Island and
okay.
grew up and was born there. So
and there's a ferry now that goes straight from Manhattan to Staten Island. Well, it always did, but now mm-hmm. you can commute really well from Staten Island or better.
It's been a long time since I've been back there.
Okay. So now where were we? Okay, so the beginning, well, I guess I should say that I can talk about elementary school. Like I was... You know how sometimes in classes there's always the bad kid, like the one that talks all the time, that or raises their hand, and that was me.
Ah.
And it was many years later, like I think I was in my 60s, that I was diagnosed as ADD, but I didn't mm-hmm. know it at the time, and nobody knew. And so I was always like loud and irrepressible, even though I didn't want to be. Like, I liked it when people didn't notice me, but everybody always did.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of veered toward the theater. I really loved the theater all my life. And I used to write all the time, too. I remember winning little contests when I was young, and in the Girl mm-hmm. Scouts, I wrote something about George Washington. I don't remember. But anyway, that was, when I was really, really young. And then in high school, that was my best thing, that I was a good writer. I was bad in math. I was bad in chemistry. I was bad in anything that would require real logic.
Yeah,
so that's where I shone. So then in college, well, I went a year abroad, like a lot of people do now. And I lived in Glasgow, and I would teach actors there how to speak American accents.
Wow.
And then I got into the theater there, which was kind of an esoteric thing to do at the time. And I loved Glasgow. It was a great kind of gritty, like Chicago used to be in Carl Sandburg's times, you know, just really a gritty place. And then, but I got into the theater there, and then I went to a city college in New York, and I was doing English. I was an English theater major. And then I decided I really wanted to be an actress. Because I really couldn't figure out what else I could do, and so I really couldn't. I applied to Yale, which is the Yale School of Drama.
Yeah,
and I got in there, and
that's a big name.
It was a big name, and it was great. I had a wonderful time. I'm friends still with people that I knew there. It was a wonderful, amazing education, but I was also there during 70, 71, and there were riots. All these things were happening. Mm. The Black Panthers were there. They were having trials. There was the student, the whole school shut down. Tanks came in from the federal government, just like they did at Kent State.
Yeah.
And it was pretty heavy and a lot of paranoia there at the time.
Can I ask you something? How did that affect you as a young woman at that time?
Well, I was pretty left, you know, and I'd been... I went to City College of New York, which had a lot of left-wing people, so I'd kind of been influenced in that way, and most of my generation was anti-the war anyway. So, but I was pretty, I considered myself, you know, a big radical. I really wasn't, but that's what I thought I was. And so I was involved, and at the time, the Panthers were very scary for a lot of people, and I was, I never got involved with them in any way, but I was pro a lot of things, so and I was not quiet about it, and so that was, I think I answered your question. I can't remember.
Roughly. You're in the middle of all that right at the moment, and I was saying how did it affect you, and you kind of gave me an idea in a sense that I guess it was a bit of a turmoil time.
It was a bit of a turmoil time. I was on the left. I got into a kind of tiff with the dean of the drama school. There was a group called the Living Theater. I don't know if you ever heard of them. They were the first people that ever kind of ran around naked on stage. And then, you know, those trust me things where you jump off into people's arms. They did that kind of stuff. And I loved them. Anyway, I got into a thing with the dean who, I won't go into that, but he decided that he would withhold my degree. So, told me I couldn't go to classes anymore. That was after, just before graduation, like 2 or 3 months before graduation. So I was kind of punished, maybe for who I was. I don't know. You know, it was just oil and water. And but the funny thing was, like, 6 months later or 4 months later, I got my diploma. They sent me my diploma anyway. So I do have my master's, even though...
Congratulations.
I was kind of glossed over. But through that school, I met great people. I met Joseph Papp at the New York Public Theater where I worked, and I had a lot of success, and I became a working actress. So that was what happened there.
And you've done a lot of stuff. A bunch of names and places that you've done a lot of stuff for a long time, including one of my favorite shows that is Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, I was just on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I just posted a picture. I'm Anne Helen, and I really bother the main guy, whose name just went out of my head because I am 73. And I was his annoying aunt, Aunt Helen. I hope I can get back. Bring back Anne Helen. Okay, thank you.
I love the show. I think it's so funny.
He's great.
Either way, it just shows the huge repertoire of stuff that you've done for quite a long, long time in your life.
Yes.
And I think that is in itself one of the reasons why we have you here today, is to show an example of somebody who has had a full life. Many things that you've done throughout it, nothing's really ever stopped you or tripped you up. I mean, looking at your book and some of the things that you've gone through, including burning your house down. I mean,
I almost burnt my house down because I was a hippie. I dropped out, you know.
Yes.
And I mean, all the time that I've been in Oregon, I lived, when I first came here, I came to Southern Oregon. I was in Langlois, which is south of Bandon. It's a small town south of Bandon, up in the mountains there, which 50 years ago was pretty isolated. You know, so that's where I was. And of course, during that time, I got a job at the Coos World as a stringer, because I had no money at all, and that was, but I never could get out of the mountain, so I'd make up my own news and then bring it in. But I remember one of my items was hole in the road, you know, like that was the kind of thing that I wrote about. But during the time I've been in Oregon and in my youth, I didn't do acting per se, you know.
Okay. Well, here we are at a point in your life where you decided great wonders that you've managed to get through. You wrote it and you put it in a book. And looking at that book, you've gone through a lot in your life. And I just thought that it's really remarkable that even at this age for yourself, 73, you have a lot of vigor in you, and you're still going.
Yeah, that's true. I think, you know, it's funny when you say that, because I don't think of myself that way. I'm just me, you know? And I guess a lot of people are like that. They're just, you know, when you say you've done a lot in your life, I mean, I think everybody's done a lot in their life.
You know, you had to get to where you're at.
Yeah, you know, so, yeah, I have. And I feel vigorous on some days. You know, I need rest. I mean, I am my age, but I'm calmer about it all. I'm not so hysterical as I used to be. So that's about the difference, and that my word retrieval is not as good.
Sometimes that happens to me too. Yeah. Believe me, I understand. Now, the fact that you decided to put your story in a book and put that out there for everybody, that's kind of flying your life story out there to everybody. How did that make you feel? What gave you that desire to want to do that?
It's not my whole life. It is that time period. You know, it's about 5 years time period from the time I'm about 23 to 27.
Yes.
And I think, well, I guess what's going on now, you never know why hippies, I mean, hippies have gotten a bad name for so long, or they used to. Now everything is mainstream, including marijuana, but including their, you know, including their outlook toward medicine, you know, food is your medicine, so many things that are now mainstream and accepted in regular world, which, and I think that I wondered how come some of the population, which was sort of like millions, thought this way and others didn't. I never could quite get it. And I also loved it so much. It was the best time I ever had. It was great. It was like going to another country, like you were in another country in your country, and everything was different. Everything was new. And it was very exciting and it was very beautiful. And, you know, I was a city girl and I really got to understand what nature was and living in nature, and the good and the difficult about that. But mostly I just wanted to share how much I loved it. And also, I mean, there were terrible things and difficult things that happened, funny things, and basically I come at things from sort of a skewed point of view, but I just wanted to share it, that's all. I just wanted to let people know how great it was, and that's it.
Well, can you give us an idea of probably one of the more harder things it was to deal with at that particular time? What was one of the big stumbling blocks in it?
You mean during that time period?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, we had, there were a couple of things, but we had an open door policy where anyone who showed up could come and stay with us. We would feed them. We would share whatever we had with them. Unless, of course, they did something that was seriously disruptive or I don't know which one to tell you. There's one where a biker gang, you know, lowriders came in. They weren't too much fun. But one guy, he was from another commune. They came because they'd burned down their house, which was at the Sixes River, which was south of Langlois. They came to live with us because they didn't have anything. They were, they were, you know, there were a lot of hippies and a lot of freaks that really were freaky and really did have some mental illnesses and were different. So anyway, they came. One day we noticed our goat was missing and so were our chickens. And what happened was that there was one man with them who killed them and hung them up in the forest. He thought he was going to present us with a wonderful meal or something like that.
Oh, wonderful.
But, and also we found out, the first thing that we noticed was when we were all having dinner at these big tables, we were served this big tureen of soup. He got up on the table and stuck his foot in the soup. So that was kind of a clue that he was not in the same world we were.
Yeah.
And then essentially what happened, we were told he was taking, ingesting a lot of drugs, and he was upset about his dog that died. We later found out that he had killed his dog because his dog was barking too much. So we had to get rid of him. We had not get rid of him. We had to make him leave, and that wasn't easy. And men had a circle around him, and he had been, he was AWOL from, I think, the Marines, circle around him and force him out, which was hard because he was a dangerous guy. It felt like he was dangerous because you did encounter dangerous people.
Yeah.
But the upshot of the whole thing was I met his girlfriend or his old lady months later, and we found out that he had gone home and was kind of comatose. He stayed in his own room for a really long time, didn't get out. And when he finally went out, his mother finally got him out. he stabbed both his parents to death.
Wow.
So that was a pretty heavy thing to hear about and to know that he was with us and that and yeah. having to ask that person with that kind of mental illness to go away.
I guess having a free, open policy door like that puts you guys at a certain amount of risk that
yeah.
anybody could just walk through, and that definitely would, as a parent having a child and having them there or something, I would be really concerned with that.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's
yeah.
definitely
yeah.
ear-raising.
So, you know, where's the line?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
where's the line? So we, you know, we always thought anyone that would come in that would be helpful and pick up a shovel or mm-hmm. gather wood or help who could bring something positive into yeah. our group was fine. But otherwise...
No, that was a... bit of a negative story, and
I thought you wanted one.
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I was saying. And no problems here. But that was the negative side of this. But there was also a positive side, because I saw a huge glow on your face when you were saying how much you loved being there, and this was a special time in your life. Can you give our listeners an idea of maybe one of those really equally as it was for that other story? On the other side of this, that really brought you there and why you were there?
Oh, I mean, there are so many. I can't think of a real specific story, except I was from New York, and if you know any seriously urban women, mm-hmm. dating and all that stuff is really difficult. I was with a man who I'm still with. I just gave away the ending of the book, but... It was really wonderful. Like, I just remember waking up in the morning and waking up in beauty, you know, like birds singing and trees and water running. And I would just, and somebody beside me who I loved and was warm. And I didn't have to worry about getting to my job or mm-hmm. where my next dollar was coming from or all that kind of stuff. Although we still had to survive.
Yeah.
And then also the companionship that I got on a very intimate level, and I'm not talking sexually, I'm talking emotionally, and the kind of support that I would get. And I know that, like, on a one-on-one marriage, you can't ask every one person for everything in your life. You have to have other areas in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so great to be able to have that kind of companionship and people who were there for me no matter what. If without them, I wouldn't have survived. You know, if I got lost in the woods, once I did get lost in the woods, and they went out and found me, and that was like, I was really
a
big
yeah.
deal. I was taught to make slashes on trees so I could follow the white cambium layer. Anyway, I got
yeah.
lost, and I was really scared, and they took care of me, and people took care of each other because there wasn't anyone else to do it. But you, when someone saves your life, or it's a big deal, and your heart opens up to them, no matter who they are, and, you know, the education level was different, and the social level was different, and people who I would never in a million years come in contact with in my other life, at first I couldn't stand them, and then I loved them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah, yeah.
and just learning that, learning really, and I also came to understand country, which, and now I guess every people, but I would understand country women, you know, I would understand what their love was like. I would understand what having that a cowboy kind-ish man was like.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved it. And it was like, but the thing, I don't know how to describe what it was like living in a different country, in your own country.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was also like pipelines, like I knew, like if I went to Yreka, I knew a place where I could go where somebody would put me up and take care of me, or a commune. And there were lots of communes at that time.
Wow.
So you could go anywhere and people would take you in, and, you know, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And it was really, it was like a whole underworld, a whole undercurrent that the main population knew nothing about.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you were very much immersed in it. Obviously, you had one particular commune, and that was 160 acres, wasn't it?
Right. Well, that was the whole... Yes, it was 160 acres in Flores Creek, which is, as I said, a little bit south of Langlois.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 6 miles up Flores Creek, 160 acres. And it was wild. I mean, it's still wild here in Oregon when you go into the country. But there were bears and cougars and...
Mm-hmm.
porcupine and deer and elk, and I'd never seen any of these things in my entire life, much less knew how to deal with them. Like, you know, what do you do if you meet up with a cougar? Hello.
Yeah, yeah.
This was like I was in my own movie, and I was the star. I mean, I was having a little trouble between reality and but it was, but the ultimate part was it was so beautiful. I just hope that we can maintain the beauty of this state and of our country, because there's nothing like it. Nothing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, living here on the coast of Florence, I can't tell you there is any direction, any place you look, it's got a beauty for it.
I mean, there was a myrtle tree near me, a big myrtle tree, and I was alone there for a period of time where people had left, and I was just alone, and like with my old man, with my husband, but. Mm-hmm. Like, that myrtle tree was like a friend.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that tree.
Now, you were there for a period of time, and you decided at one point it was time to move on. Can you give our listeners an idea of what made you feel like it was time to pack it up and move up?
Well, the rest of the commune had left because mm-hmm. we got into a tiff, which I won't go into now, but which is in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a baby by that time. It was rough with a baby.
Mm.
Well, he was about a little under two, but with no running water, no hot water, no toilet, you know,
wow.
outhouse,
yeah,
all
yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
I have
camping
kids,
out.
I know what it's like, even with running
right.
water.
it was rough. And
yeah.
my husband, who we had to have, he would go off and, you know, go into the woods and get wood or work for a local rancher. And one day, this is in my book also, I was canning plums, I think, and the fire got out of hand, and the stovepipe got really hot. My roof went on fire, and I had no way to put it out. And it was like September, you know, so it was fire season.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just went, oh my God, you know, I tried to put it out. I had no ladder. I threw water up in the air. It landed on my head.
You know? Hey, you were trying.
I was trying. And then I was saved like serendipitously it was crazy that some people showed up and put out the fire. That was really nuts. But I realized that with a baby, I just couldn't survive. I didn't have the skills. I was not naked and afraid, you know.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. And I felt like I have to go back to a place where I can survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was that. I couldn't do it, you know.
The new chapter in your life.
That, and then I went, you know, then I kind of, we loaded up a truck and I went to Los Angeles to become a movie star. That didn't work out really well, but I had hopes at the time.
Hey, you're doing stuff today,
yeah.
and that's the beautiful, and
yeah.
if you stick around long enough and try, you will get
okay,
there.
Great.
No, yeah, I've seen your work, and I'm pleased to say that you do a great job.
Oh, thank
you. And you've done a beautiful job on this book, too. Is there any particular piece out of that you'd want to read a few pages on for us? Or?
Well, there's so many things, but I think there's names and stuff. I think maybe I'll just read from the beginning, which is not about Oregon, but I guess
that's fine.
Okay.
It gets us started on something.
And yeah, and it's a good beginning, I think. Oh, and I have a foreword here. Henry Winkler, who was the Fonz, wrote my foreword to my book.
Yeah, I love him. He's been around
He's great.
For a long
he was
time.
Great.
Yeah.
So this is the chapter one, Any Day Now. The shoe shot through my open window, torpedoed the baby avocado plant on my Greek Falcati rug, and changed my life forever. It was a man's loafer, scuffed with tassels, not big, maybe a size 10. I picked it up and turned it over. The sole was worn so thin a hole was spreading through the middle. A dead man lay face down on the third floor balcony of my artist-subsidized studio apartment. A small Hasselblad camera was wrapped around his neck, on his right foot only a sock. The sad flying shoe that had covered it now sat on top of wool and potting soil. I guess the man hadn't fallen. He jumped. It was just a guess, but one formed by experience. Suicide had infiltrated my building. Misery was in the halls. 6 months earlier, before I moved in, the lead viola of Uncle Abe's neoklezmer band had jumped off the southern edge of the roof and crash-landed onto West Street. Now someone was screaming with such a piercing sound it made my ears ring. God, she was loud. My throat was raw and tight. It was me. Is that? Then it goes on. So that was kind of something that catapulted me out of New York.
Wow. Yeah. That's very interesting way to start off the book, too.
Yeah. Really happened, too. I never... A shoe hit me. Oh, no, a shoe hit the plant. I was just like, oh, wow.
Yeah, so, well, it's amazing stories that we all have.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful for you to have been able to come in here and share that with all of us here in KXCR 90.7 FM, where we like to show the great creativity that is out there at all ages and at all times in your life. So when you get a chance to be able to write a book or be able to ride a horse or be able to just live life, that's a beautiful thing. And I just think that you've had a really wonderful life, and it was really nice of you to be able to put this into writing and to come in here and share a little bit about your life and where you're at today and all that. Carol Schlanger.
That's right. You got it right.
Yep.
And
Hippie Woman Wild.
Right. And can I mention my website?
Sure.
www.hippiewomanwild. And I'm on Amazon and all those other places. And I can't tell you how much fun, and this was so nice of you to have me. So thank you so very much.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
I loved it.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, and thank all my listeners for listening to us here on KXCR 90.7 FM.
This has been KXCR Conversations with you, a regular feature here at KXCR. Having a conversation is easy. Call 997-5252. Email info@kxcr.net or visit us at the station across from the library. Our combined history makes our community. We all have the energy and power to do good things. Organizing and energizing ourselves is a great step in conversation. This is Community Radio, KXCR, Florence, 90.7.